So I'm going to work real hard to stay on script. Yeah. Yeah, there's so when I first look at the passage, you know, I know kind of know what's coming up, and I start looking at the passage, and I read it initially. It's five verses, I think. Oh my gosh. I don't know that there's enough here. And then you get studying, and you start seeing the connected passages, and you're like, oh my gosh. There is so much wisdom and depth in this passage. And then when we were together this morning as brothers, it just comes alive, right? And so super thankful for that. So excited to be here and really excited to teach this passage to you, to us tonight. So last week we were in Ruth chapter 2, verses 8 through 22. And we saw faithfulness in action. So we said the passage was all about faithfulness. We saw Ruth's humble service, Boaz's generous stewardship, and Naomi's interaction, her faithfulness, and God's sovereign providence. Regular or ordinary tasks together. And so we also, if you remember, we pulled together some wisdom from Ecclesiastes, and we learned that seeking self-defined purpose, this push in our culture to find meaning, to find purpose, but our pursuit of doing that is vanity. But faithfulness to our God-given tasks, ordinary things that are ahead of us, our jobs, our parenting, interacting with one another, being part of our community, these ordinary things where we seek to be faithful in the moment to moment, brings us joy and also freedom. And ultimately, God does weave that and tie it into His purposes. It's where we find meaning. So Ecclesiastes 3:11 declares, He has made everything beautiful in its time. So today in Ruth chapter 3, verses 1 through 5, we're going to see a shift. And Naomi and Ruth switch, they shift from faithful diligence to ordinary tasks to strategic planning. So it's a little bit of a transition, and it's also a carryover from last week. So again, remember, last week we talked a lot about just being faithful in ordinary things. And you would think, or someone even might conclude, well, where does that leave planning? Or do we not pursue anything? Do we not look to the future in any way? Well, this passage is a continuation, and it's going to answer that question. But it keeps faithful planning, or wise planning, in its context. So Jonathan Edwards, not my father-in-law, but the historical Puritan, was a pivotal American theologian and a pastor and a philosopher. He lived during the early to mid-1700s. He's widely regarded as one of the most influential thinkers in early American history. He was part, if you remember some of American history, if they ever taught you this, but the part of the Great Awakening, a revival in our country that took place in the mid-1700s. He wrote lots of books. Most of these Puritan guys did. They were prolific writers. But one of the books that he read that a friend encouraged me to consider as I was studying was a book called The End for Which God Created the World. And while he's describing the ends for which God created the world, he argues that God's glory, in other words, putting God's attributes on display, taking all of his character traits together and displaying them all at once, so people go, oh my God, awesome, in the true sense of the word. When God's glory is put on display, that is the ultimate purpose for all creation. That's where all of what we experience, by the way, good, bad, and evil, that's where all of it is going, is to God's glory. And Jonathan Edwards calls this terminating ends. It's the termination of everything. It's the end of everything that ever has ever been experienced in all of history. It's the terminating ends. And then he uses another phrase to define what it is that we do. All human actions, the things that we participate in, he calls those subordinate ends. Remember, the word subordinate means to serve or to come up under. And so everything that God does is a terminal end. There's nothing that he does that's haphazard or like, oh, I missed that. Everything that he participates in, that he orchestrates, that he allows or ordains, however it is that he works his ultimate plan, is terminating in its end. In other words, everything he does, even the evil he allows, is for his glory, his attributes to be put on display. We talked about this a few months ago when we were in the Gospel of Mark. Even the crucifixion, which he ordained, the worst possible thing in all of history, God ordains that, and in the middle of it, if you would have asked his disciples, how is this working out? They'd have been like, what's going on? This is horrible. This is the worst thing ever. All of our plans are upended. What is God doing? Where is God at? Even when his disciples were experiencing that, God is using all of these things to his terminating ends, and it's all about his attributes being put on display. And when the disciples finally saw clearly, they were willing to give their lives up for it. And church, family, there is coming a day when everything will be peeled back, and we will be able to see the timeline of history, good, bad, and evil, and like a plot line in a movie where you finally get it, you go, oh my gosh, that's what that was about. When we get to heaven and it's all pulled back and we see, we'll go, that is amazing. God, you are glorified. Nobody else could have pulled, I didn't see that coming. I didn't see that evil turning into that thing. That's what we're going to do. And Jonathan Edwards says, the end, the terminating end of all things, is God's attributes being on full display, and we can all see them all at once. And then everything we do, everything we participate in, is subordinate ends. So as we dive into Ruth chapter 3, verses 1 through 5, and there's this shift from faithfulness in ordinary tasks to wise planning, I've really found that this terminology used by Edwards is really helpful. This terminating ends and subordinate ends. It helps us to see that God is always working and doing something, and what we do matters, but it's not ultimate. So that's my hope for us today, is to see that more clearly. And again, I think Jonathan Edwards' terminology helps us, so I'm going to weave that in our passage for today. We're going to see this relationship between human actions and divine works. So I'm going to take a little bit more time to unpack kind of this definition that I just spoke of. It's in your notes. But Edwards teaches that God's glory is the ultimate terminating ends, the final purpose of all things, while our actions are subordinate ends which serve his eternal glory, even though we can't see where they ultimately will go. You with me? So Ruth and Naomi's faithful planning, like their obedience, serves a subordinate end. And then God takes those things and he weaves them, if you will, into his terminating end, which again is to display his character traits, his glory, through all of history and ultimately in the redemption of man. Kevin said that he draws us to himself and into his family. So, for example, next week, we're going to be diving in more in depth to the person and character of Boaz. So remember, together, Ruth and Boaz are great-grandparents of King David. And then also remember that they are generational great-grandparents to the sixth power, so the great-great six times, of Jesus. We already know from our study that Ruth was a Moabite outsider, an enemy of Israel. But also, did you know that Boaz's mother was Rahab the prostitute from Joshua chapter 2? She was a Canaanite, another enemy. And this is Boaz's mom. I love this part. God using completely unlikely people, completely unlikely family lines. If we were picking out a group of people to bring redemption from this church, God would pick somebody we would be like, wrong person. But God knows what he's doing. And so Matthew records in chapter 1, verse 5, that Boaz is the son of Ruth, or of Rahab, who brings about Obed, who was the father of King David, the great-grandfather times of Jesus. And once again, in Scripture, we see how God uses flawed people and flawed family lines and flawed human efforts to fulfill his ultimate purpose of redemption, his terminating ends. Is that amazing? I don't know about you. I'm containing myself. I'm sticking to my notes. Church family, this is good, deep truth for us. So here's our thesis, our main point for today. By ceasing to strive for self-defined meaning and embracing faithfulness, what we talked about last week, now we're going to build on it, whether that's in daily tasks or in strategic planning, in both of those ways, we participate in subordinate ends that God transforms into his terminating ends. Bringing glory to himself and accomplishing redemption through the world. So that's our main point. And hopefully everything else will hang on that today. It's where we're kind of focusing our thoughts and intentions. So let me read, and then I'm going to pray and we're going to jump in. Ruth chapter 3, verses 1 through 5. Then Naomi, her mother-in-law, said to her, "My daughter, should I not seek rest for you, that it may be well with you? Is not Boaz our relative, with whose young women you were, ever she was gleaning in the fields? See, he is winnowing barley tonight at the threshing floor. Wash, therefore, and anoint yourself, and put on your cloak, and go to the threshing floor. But do not make yourself known to the man until he has finished eating and drinking. But when he lies down, observe the place where he lies. Then go and cover his feet and lie down. And then he will tell you what to do." And she, Ruth, replied to her and said, "All that you say, I will do." Father, thank you for your word and the depth and the wisdom and the intricacy of it, and the ability to apply it to our lives and living today. We thank you that you're constantly at work, even when we can't see you, even when it's hard to see you. Some of us today just need to be encouraged in that. Others need eyes to see. So would you help us in whatever way we come today to be able to connect these truths to our lives and to see you faithfully working, and then to have a deeper passion to join you, to be faithful, whether in just daily ordinary tasks or in strategic planning. And we can't do that without you. I don't, as excited as I am to bring the word, I don't have the capacity, nor articulation to make us believe. We need you for that. We are dependent for you to run these truths into our hearts, or we are truly dead in the water. So we ask for your help, Spirit, understand your word, to give us the desire to apply it. And then, Lord, may we participate in all that you're doing by joyful obedience and faithful obedience to your word. Amen. Okay, so we're going to be taking a look at three primary points and then a fourth point by way of application. And so the first point is this: Naomi's and Ruth's faithfulness in strategic planning is a subordinate end. We're going to take a look at that. Secondly, their loyalty and their trust that they share in their relationship and what's going on in their relationship is the heartbeat of both their actions, both of ordinary obedience and in faithful planning. Faith and trust and loyalty shape the heartbeat of why they're doing what they're doing. And then third, God's sovereign redemption through people, through broken people, through unlikely people culminate in his glory, terminating ends. So our first point, faithfulness in strategic, wow. Can you edit that out, please? Faithfulness in strategic planning as a subordinate end. So last week we saw that Ruth was faithfully gleaning. She's just working to find food to eat. And she's in Boaz's field. She's not chasing significance. She's not disgruntled with her not lot. She's not upset that she's having to pick seeds. She just knows this is what I've got to do today. So I'm going to do it. She's living faithfully in her God-given lot. And so likewise, we began to see that Naomi is beginning to see God's provision. Remember, she says, "Don't no longer call me Naomi. Call me Mara, bitterness. I once was sweet, now I'm bitter. Don't call me that anymore." But now she's beginning to see, wait a minute, maybe there's hope here. There's some redemption possibly on the surface. And so she begins to recognize God's chesed, his steadfast covenant love, his committed love. She's beginning to see that in Boaz's kindness to Ruth. Oh my gosh, could this be? This is Naomi's disposition. And so together, Naomi and Ruth and Boaz and their faithfulness, this is what we talked about last week, all kind of pulling together, begins to echo Ecclesiastes chapter 3, verse 22. There is nothing better that a person should rejoice in his work, for this is their lot. So we should all eat and drink and be merry and be mindful of God and just be faithful to the things in front of us. So that's what we saw Ruth and Boaz and Naomi doing. They're all participating. In other words, their imperfect faithfulness to God was an end in of itself. I'm going to be faithful, Lord. I don't know where it's going from here. I just want to be faithful. I just want to be faithful in whatever is in front of me. So in other words, Edwards would say, I just want to be faithful in my subordinate ends. Wherever God takes it is up to him. However he terminates what I'm doing, that's his job. I want to be faithful with my subordinate ends in my job. So as we start our study in verses 1 through 5, we're going to shift again from gleaning to planning. And this marks a shift in the book of Ruth. And so there's four clear lessons. These are in your notes. I'm going to give you some titles for these quickly. But the first point is strategic planning. The second one is limited sightedness. They have limited sight. The third point is connecting faith. So strategic planning, limited sightedness, but yet faith is what connects those things together. The only way, church family, that we're going to be faithful in our daily tasks is if we're able on a consistent basis to connect that to what God's ultimately doing. You with me? Without knowing, there's too much chaos and craziness in our world and in our lives to be able to go, what's all this about? If you don't know that God is taking that someplace, you're going to ultimately, you're going to struggle with daily faithfulness. So strategic planning, limited sight, connected faith, and faithfulness in both. Daily activity, strategic planning. Let me unpack those a little bit. So Ruth is steadfastly gleaning. And Naomi's trust in God's provision, both of those things, were subordinate ends. Naomi, begins to develop a strategic plan. She sees some of these things maybe happening, and she develops a strategic plan to secure Ruth's future, potentially through Boaz. Verse 1, then Naomi, her mother-in-law, said to her, my daughter, should I not seek rest for you, that it may be well for you? I want good things for you, and I think this could be the way that good things happen for you. And she starts to develop a plan. And this bold act of faith on Naomi's part becomes a subordinate end, another effort in God's plans. I've been having a hard time trying to communicate this in my mind to you all week. But when I'm talking about planning, it's not, remember, Naomi's not going, maybe this will go well for you, and then it'll go well for you, and then all of a sudden you'll get married, you'll have a baby, then that baby's going to have another baby, that's going to be the king of Israel, and then she's not thinking that way. She has no capacity to think that far. So her ability to be faithful is limited by her sightedness. She can't see as far as God can see. So she's just being faithful in the things that are in front of her, whether routine or intentional. They begin to understand God knows what to do, and so I'm just going to serve His purposes. I'm just going to do what He says to do. So that's the first thing. Second point that we learn through the story is everybody's got limited sight. So again, Jonathan Edwards teaches that the terminal end of all of creation is God's glory. And so he writes this, the happiness of the creature consists in rejoicing in God, by which also God is magnified and exalted. So what Ecclesiastes says, when we take joy in what's in front of us, that in and of itself magnifies and glorifies the Lord. So Naomi and Ruth, their planning, like their daily faithfulness, finds meaning in the fact that God's in charge. At the end of the day, even though I can't see everything, God is ultimately at work. So then the third point, connecting faith, Ecclesiastes 11:6 says, in the morning, sow your seed, and at the evening, withhold not your hand, for you do not know which will prosper. In other words, in the morning, sow your seed, in the evening, tend your work, because you don't know whether the sowing or the tending is going to prosper. That's God's job. Just be faithful with what's in front of you. And so Naomi and Ruth sow seeds of faith through strategic obedience, and they're trusting in God to weave their subordinate ends, their daily tasks, and their wise planning into His terminal end. God's going to do what He's going to do. Friends, everything we do is a subordinate end. Everything. It's not terminal unless God adopts it into His plans. His ends are terminal. Ours are always subordinate. Two things that should do. Humble us and give us tons of freedom. It's not up to me. At the end of the day, God is going to beautifully integrate our faithfulness into His glorious plan. Connect and fade. Fourth thing, faithfulness in both. So the shift from gleaning to planning shows that our faithfulness includes both daily obedience and wise planning. So Proverbs 16:9 says, "The heart of the man plans his way, but the Lord establishes his steps." The wise person plans his way, but the Lord establishes his steps. Naomi and Ruth plan and execute faithfully, and they're trusting God that it will work. So our plans for our family, for our working, moms, for what you're planning your homeschool year, men, some of you are doing business plans, you're trying to execute things at work, all of those things are meaningful, but not just for our own significance and not just because they provide, but because they serve God's ultimate terminal ends. So faithfulness in strategic planning. Secondly, loyalty and trust is the heartbeat. It's the foundation for Ruth and Naomi's relationship. So this plan that Naomi develops, oh my gosh, I think this is happening. Here's what I think you ought to do. Do this, do this, do this, do this. Go to Boaz. Lay at his feet. Then we'll figure it out from there. But she wants good for Ruth. We've seen that Ruth has been extremely loyal to Naomi. Now we see Naomi's loyalty to Ruth. I want good for you. Here's something Naomi knows that Ruth apparently doesn't. See, Naomi understands what God has put into place in the Old Testament law, Deuteronomy chapter 25. For this whole process, if a woman leaves her husband, there's so much provision for women in the scripture. If a woman loses her husband, I want to take care of those ladies. Here's the plan on how that happens. Naomi understands that. She begins to execute in trust. Lord, this is what you say. This is how we go about getting Ruth help. We're going to follow your plan, and then we're going to trust you. And so that's what Naomi is doing. And Ruth then responds and shows her sacrificial love and her loyalty. And we saw this back in chapter 1, verse 16. Remember when Ruth says to Naomi, "Your people are going to be my people. Your God's going to be my God. Wherever you go, I'm going to go. I'm going to do what you're going to do." She's faithful to Naomi. So Naomi is trusting. She's loyal to Ruth, wanting what's best for her. And then in verse 5, she's also trusting the Lord. Once you do all of this stuff, if you execute my plan, then we got to trust the Lord. Then Boaz is going to tell you what you should do. And it's through this covenant love that these two women have for each other that we begin to see this redemptive plan that God is going to execute. Subordinate ends, terminal ends. So Ruth then responds to this plan that Naomi is sharing with her. Verse 5, "Whatever you say, I'm going to do that." This reflects her trust, her relationship with Naomi, and also her willingness to execute this plan by faith. "Whatever you say, I'm going to do." There's trust and there's faith. She's not hesitating. She's not seeking her own agenda. Can you imagine this? You're in a completely foreign city. You don't know the customs. These are completely different customs. Your husband's died. Your mother-in-law's husband has died. And now she says, here's what I want you to do. I want you to go to this threshing floor, which is a location that women aren't really allowed. Go anyway. Dress up, look nice, and then lay down at this guy's feet when he's sleeping. And when he wakes up, he's going to tell you what to do. Would you have questions? And yet Ruth says, I'll do it. Your God will be my God. You're telling me that that's God's way? I said I was signing up for this. I'm going there. That's what I'm going to do. This is loyalty and trust. And it's the heartbeat of this faithful planning. So by the way, application for us, at the heartbeat of any planning we do should be both loyalty and trust in the Lord. This may not go the way I want it to go, or I can only plan so far, and then we're going to trust the Lord for the rest. So again, we find Ecclesiastes speaking to this, chapter 4, verse 9. Two are better than one, for if they fall, one will lift up his fellow. So here we see these two women, their mutual commitment to one another, their trust and their loyalty to both each other and to the Lord, serve as subordinate ends that God uses in his terminating ends and to bring about his redemptive plan. Church family, this should cause us to want to cultivate and deepen these kind of chesed, these covenantal love, these committed relationships with other people and with God. So our world is driven, and you don't have to look very far, by self-interest, pushing everybody for themselves. Yet Naomi and Ruth live out loyalty to each other and trust in God and his word. As Edwards taught, our actions find ultimate meaning when they point to God's glory. Our actions find ultimate meaning when we realize they end in God's glory. Our love for others, as invaluable as it is also a subordinate end. It's a means by which we reflect God is really kind. God is really good. Brings us to our third point, God's sovereign redemption, the terminating ends through broken people. So again, a profound truth emerges in Boaz's lineage. Matthew 1:5 reveals that Boaz is the son of Salmon and Rahab, the Canaanite prostitute. I was talking to a brother about this morning. He says, I think that is actually the most profound thought in the entire passage. I agree. I think it shapes Boaz's thinking significantly and why he's so gracious and kindness to Ruth as a Moabite outsider, because his mother was a Canaanite outsider. So Rahab was an outsider with a broken past, yet by faith, very limited faith, she was spared, and she's woven into God's covenant people as Boaz's mother. And her life is a testament to God's grace. He transforms this flawed woman into an instrument of his redemptive plan. It's amazing. And we saw in chapter 2 how Boaz carries this kind of redemptive care and this legacy of redemption into his relationship with Ruth, another outsider. This mirrors the grace that God has shown to Rahab. And yet, as faithful as they are, Boaz's faithful actions are still subordinate ends. They're kind, they're loving, they're faithful, but they're not ultimate. Only God can do that. So Matthew's genealogy shows Rahab and Boaz and Ruth, these three broken figures in the lineage of Jesus, the ultimate kinsman redeemer. Family, we've seen this all throughout the entire book, that God's sovereign care is evident and it's woven. So we've been talking about these characters, their faithfulness, they're working towards God's glory, but God is always in the background working. Naomi's plan is bold, but it's also uncertain. Matter of fact, we're going to see this next week, but in chapter 3, verse 12, there's another person who could come before Boaz in this line of redeemer. So all of a sudden, in the middle of this story, we realize, oh my gosh, our story could come undone. There's this other dude. What's going on with that? So Naomi's plan is bold, it's faithful, but it's uncertain. She can't see the end. Yet again, they trust what the Lord is doing. Ecclesiastes 3 says, the Lord, we talked about this last week, makes everything beautiful in His time. There's nothing better for them, men and women, than to be joyful and to do good as long as they live. Ruth and Naomi do not see the ultimate scope of God's plan, but their obedience participates in it, even if they can't see it. So again, Edwards' insight, the happiness of the creature consists in rejoicing in God. This whole story, this whole narrative, from beginning to end, we're going to see that it's building towards this character of Boaz. But it's a reflection. The whole story, from beginning to end, points to Jesus as the terminating end of all of creation, of all of history. All things exist for God's glory, and Jesus' life, His death, and His resurrection display that supremely. That culminates in this book. But in the meantime, before that happens, Ruth's faithfulness, Boaz's faithfulness, Naomi's faithfulness serve as redemptive pictures of what God is going to do ultimately. They're picking seeds. They're planning with limited sightedness. And yet they love each other. They're loyal to one another. And yet these are the very things that God uses until his plan is complete. Church, that's what we get to participate in. Whether that's daily acts of obedience in ordinary things or faithful planning that we can't completely see the end, all of this participates in what God is going to do beyond what we can see. Naomi's plan requires effort, just like Ruth's gleaning did. So we're beginning to see that trusting God in daily obedience doesn't just mean sitting in our hands and, okay, I can only do what's ahead of me, but also in strategic planning. So again, Naomi tells Ruth, wash, anoint yourself, put on your cloak, go down to the threshing floor, know where he lies, uncover his feet, lie down, and then he will tell you what you can do. In other words, Naomi, do what you can, or Ruth, do what you can, and then trust God for the rest. It's a good word for us. Button Branch family, do what you can, plan as far as you can see, and then trust the Lord for the rest. It's true. Let's consider what this means for us by way of application. First, embrace our lot as subordinate ends. Embrace our lot as subordinate ends. Like both Ruth and Naomi, both their daily obedience and their strategic planning, our tasks, our work, our interacting, our purchasing things in the community, our putting gas in people's tanks, our fixing cars, whatever it is that we do, building houses, discipling people, whatever it is that we do, they're all subordinate ends. Decisions and then to execute them, because at the end of the day, he's going to absorb all of it into his terminal ends. He will be glorified. Period. It's going to happen. And whether you do that close to perfectly or imperfectly, God will use it, and then he will reveal it to you if you're open to it, and then you adjust yourself to him. You say, I really want to live for you. He's going to help you, and he will be glorified. And we can trust him, and we can rest in that. So this reality that we can embrace our lot as subordinate gives us, again, both hope and freedom. So here's a reflection for us to consider. Are there any decisions or plans that you've been putting off planning, or you've been putting off making a decision that this truth will give you both joy and hope and freedom to make? So embrace our lot as subordinate ends. Secondly, plan wisely as a subordinate end. Naomi's plan was a subordinate act, but again, she couldn't see the end. And I think some of us, I know I do, weary ourselves looking for the end of this thing. We want to try to make it so it has to work. And we burden our... That's why we stay up at night, true? That's why we spin our wheels. Not understanding this is the beginning of anxiety. Plan wisely as a subordinate end. Lord, I'm going to plan, but this is not ultimate. I'll plan my ways, you direct my steps. So here's a reflection for us to consider. What plan is God calling you to pursue by faith? Or what daily obedience does God want you to joyfully execute by faith? A couple reflections. Third application, work diligently for God's glory. Ruth and Naomi's efforts show that faithfulness requires work. If you're thinking God's in charge, so I get to do nothing, then you've missed a lot of what we've been talking about. Faithfulness requires work. Do your tasks, whether daily or ordinary or strategic planning. Colossians 3:23, we read at the beginning, says, whatever you do it heartily, as for the Lord, and not for men. So here's a reflection for us to consider. What 2 to 3 specific ways can you work heartily or faithfully or joyfully or plan that way? Are there some ways that we can be planning and trusting that, God, you're going to take this and this will ultimately terminate in your glory. Lastly, trust God's terminating ends through brokenness. We've seen over and over that this is, whether that's in Naomi's life or Ruth's life or Boaz's life, God uses flawed people to accomplish his ultimate ends. Your past does not disqualify you. Your family tree does not disqualify you. It's a subordinate ends. We should see clearly God will use whatever family dynamic or personality quirk that you have to serve his terminal ends. Our job is to be joyful and faithful in the ordinary or in the planning. God help us. And so a reflection for us is this. Some of us just need to figure out what are some ways that you can rest in his grace. Just rest. Because you're going to do it, Lord. And I just want to participate with you. With everything that I have. With all the gifts and abilities. And also, with all my quirks. With all my difficulties. I just want to rest. Because you're going to do it. Father in heaven, I must trust you to take these words and run them deep into our hearts. We thank you for your glory, for your attributes that we will one day see all together, all at once, and it will make all the good and the bad in our lives make sense. It will make all the good and all the evil in the world fall into place. We will see you for who you are, and we will see all circumstances for what they are. And until then, help us to trust you. Thank you that seeing your attributes on display is the end. It's the terminating end of all things. Forgive us for chasing meaning apart from you, and forgive us for questioning whether or not that you're truly going to be good. Father, like Ruth and Naomi, help us to be faithful in our daily tasks and in our wise planning. That we would rejoice in you as we serve your sovereign and eternal purposes. Thank you for using broken people with broken families like Ruth, like Rahab, like Boaz, like us, to fulfill your redemptive plan. May our subordinate ends magnify your glory. May we reflect the faithfulness, ultimately, of Jesus, our Redeemer, who came to get us when we didn't want to be gone. We pray in his name. Amen.